Yeah, the beauty of the Christmas tree. It's a tradition at the Barth House that we go out day after Christmas, day after Thanksgiving, sorry. And yeah. We go find a tree. Yeah, cheap tree. Thanks, Amy. Yeah, right? So but you guys don't understand. I live with a woman that is the most amazing Christmas tree decorator of all time. How many thousands of lights do we put on it?
Well, we couldn't fit all 3,000 this year because we didn't have enough range.
Yeah, well, I only have a 9-foot ceiling, so. And oh, trust me, it's kind of bent. So it was one of those years where Lowe's was, I don't know, it was low inventory. So shout out to Stephanie Golden for running the half marathon last week. Congratulations. Well done. That's awesome. Mimi Lawson is here. Where are you these days?
I was in Cameroon, West Africa.
Okay.
I'm in Dallas today.
But you're okay, good. Well, we're glad you're here. Thanks for joining us. So, as Chuck said, right, we are on the last day or last session on Advent. If you remember, right, the first week we looked at hope, then we looked at peace and joy last week, and then this week we're going to look at love. And so, as I have been, right, we're going to use the Bible Project videos and or video, and we'll walk through that. But one thing I wanted to start out with, I think I shared with you the first week where I read from Malcolm Guite's book, Waiting on the Word. This is a book that's basically chock full of poetry, and each day of Advent, and then I think he goes into Epiphany, basically gives a poem, and then he turns around and gives his insight into that poem. This was one of those poems that I thought, oh, I kind of like this. And so I thought, let's start with this. I apologize. The type is very small, but I will read it to you. It's called Advent Sunday by Christina Rossetti. Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out with lighted lamps and garlands round about, to meet him in a rapture with a shout. It may be at the midnight black as pitch, earth shall cast up her poor, cast up her rich. It may be at the crowing of the cock, earth shall upheave her depth, uproot her rock. For lo, the bridegroom fetcheth home the bride, his hands are hands she knows his side. Like pure Rebecca at the appointed place, veiled she unveils her face to meet his face. Like great Queen Esther in her triumphing, she triumphs in the presence of her king. His eyes are as a dove's, and she's dove-eyed. He knows his lovely mirror, sister, bride. He speaks with dove voice of exceeding love, and she with love voice of an answering dove. Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go we out, with lamps ablaze and garlands round about, to meet him in a rapture with a shout. Just felt like it kind of set the mood and provided a little bit there. So I know one of the things we've been doing is talking a little bit about what does Advent actually mean. I kind of gave you some of the stats. The first week, we've talked a little bit about the hope. And we talked about Advent means arrival. Today, one of the things that was really speaking to me, I was listening to a Chris McDaniel. He is a Anglican priest out of Atlanta that I've listened to from time to time. Anyway, he gave a message on waiting and that Advent is a time for waiting. And I took a step back from this and started thinking to myself, when do we start waiting for Christmas? And one of the things I was trying to do was remember when I waited for Christmas. And you, it's almost like putting yourself in the position of your kids, right? Because let's face it, they're waiting. They're counting the days for the ability to open those gifts. Reality is, we should be counting the days to celebrate the birth of Christ. But I think we lose, right? We obviously lose that element. But if you kind of try to think through that waiting, that anticipation, that buildup of what happens. And we, that's one of the reasons why we talked about candles last week. We light candles, right? The candles allow us to mark time, to recognize, okay, this is the next week. And, you know, remember, when you light the Advent candles, you're lighting each one, right? It's a progression. Don't leave them lit because you'll burn your house down. But, right? But it marks that time for us to take a step back and wait. And it's this waiting. It's this anticipation. And I think as we look at that in our lives, I am very guilty of this, where I go. And sometimes, kind of like what we talked about in when I was doing the session on prayer last time, is that if we wait and take a step back, we begin to recognize where God is working in our lives. So I think it's more than just an Advent thing of waiting, but it's using this as a time to kind of begin to recognize, okay, where is God working, right? Where is God engaged in my life? Remembering, waiting allows us to take a step back and remember the past, and in that past, how God engaged with us and what He did. And that's, to me, that's very comforting. It's very helpful, but it's also very difficult, in all confession, for me. So to me, and kind of where this was going is, this is an opportunity, right? It's an opportunity to take a step back, to think about it, to pause, to be still. And, you know, it doesn't have to be hours at a time, right? If you guys remember from the prayer book, it's 5 minutes in the morning just to listen to the Lord. I don't know. Does anybody journal? Yeah, of course you journal. Yeah, sort of, kind of. Well, you've got how many kids now, right? Yeah. Yeah, six. So good luck journaling there, right? Yeah. I don't know. To me, I've never journaled. I've tried about 5 times, and I usually get one day done, and I'm done. It just, you know what I mean? I think there's books around the house where I have one day. I'm very good. I write the date. I do all that, and then, yeah, it's all gone. So how far back do you journal, Cindy? Seriously, do you have journals way back? Do you really? Dang. Do you ever go back?
No, and I should, but I don't.
Okay.
I've got a stack of them in a cabinet, and I'm yeah. always, well, I think I should go back and look at
yeah,
them.
Yeah, right. You could use ChatGPT, and it could pull that information up for you, right? Anyway, that almost makes me feel a little bit better that I do. Well, that I don't journal, because if you don't go back and look, then, right? Because isn't that the whole purpose of journaling, is to kind of look back?
No.
Boy, you guys, no. Yeah, okay. All right, well, I'm just checking. I'm not picking on you, Cindy. Okay. Just pick on her? Right. Okay, so if you remember, right, 4 words that represent Advent. Hope. We talked about hope, the anticipation, looking forward to Christ's return, right? We, if you remember, we were looking at the past to recognize that the return was coming. And we talked about the Israelites and the 400 years and the like. Then we talked about peace. And if you remember, this was around shalom. And it wasn't just peace like we were thinking, right? The shalom was more making it whole, bringing it all together. Then we talked about joy being not happy, because we talked about you can be sorrowful, right? And have challenges, but still have joy in your heart because of the underlying relationship that you have. So today we're going to look at love. So, oops, wrong one. All right, just a second. There we go. Let's see if that works.
So, if you've heard of Jesus, you probably know
Thank
about
you.
One of the things that James calls the golden rule. Do to others what you would want them to do to you. And this, actually, is a restatement of something else that Jesus said, that the meaning of life is to love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Now, that's really beautiful, but what does he mean exactly by the word love? It's an unclear word in English, because you can love your mom and you can love pizza. And if the word love means the same thing in both of those cases, your mom's gonna feel real bad. So what did Jesus mean in his language? Well, first of all, this love your neighbor phrase is a quotation from the Hebrew scriptures, where the word for love is ahava. However, the language Jesus spoke and taught in from day to day was a cousin language of Hebrew, that is Aramaic, in which the word for love is rahma. But then, as Jesus' followers spread his teachings around the world, they translated them into Greek, using the word agape. But here's what's fascinating. The earliest followers of Jesus, who wrote the books of the New Testament in Greek, they didn't learn the meaning of agape by looking it up in ancient dictionaries. Rather, they looked to the teachings of Jesus and the story of his life to redefine their very concept of love. So one time, Jesus was asked about the most important command in the Jewish scriptures. And he first quoted from the ancient prayer in the Torah called the Shema. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart. So love for God is the most important thing. But then Jesus quickly followed up by saying another command from the Torah was also the most important, to love your neighbor as yourself. So which is the most important, loving God or loving your neighbor? Jesus' answer is yes. To ask the question means you don't get his point. For Jesus, they are two sides of the same coin. Your love for God will be expressed by your love for people, and vice versa, they're inseparable. And so this makes it clear that for Jesus, agape love is not primarily a feeling for someone else that happens to you, like our phrase, I fell in love. For Jesus, love is action. It's a choice that you make to seek the well-being of people other than yourself. Jesus also went on to teach that genuine love for God and others means seeking people's well-being without expecting anything in return, especially from people who are in difficult situations, who can't repay you even if they wanted to. According to Jesus, this kind of generous love reflects the very heartbeat of God. And he took this even further. Jesus said that the ultimate standard of authentic love is how well you treat the person that you can't stand. Or in his words, you shall love your enemy and do good to them, expecting nothing in return. For Jesus, this kind of enemy-embracing love imitates the very character of God himself. Now, we wouldn't be talking about Jesus still today if he had only said things like love your enemy. This is how he actually lived. Jesus was constantly helping and serving the people around him in very practical and tangible ways. And he consistently moved towards poor and hurting people who couldn't benefit him in return. He showed love for the forgotten ones, the people who usually fall through the cracks. And when Jesus eventually marched into Jerusalem, he made himself an enemy of the leaders of his people by accusing them of hypocrisy and corruption. But then instead of attacking his enemies to overthrow them, he allowed them to kill him. Jesus died for the selfishness and corruption of his enemies because he loved them. After Easter morning, Jesus and then his followers claimed that it was the power of God's love for the world that was revealed in Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. As the Apostle Paul put it, God demonstrated his own agape for us in this: while we were still sinners, the Messiah died for us. Or in the words of the Apostle John, God's own agape was revealed when he sent his one and only Son into the world so that through him we could have life. And for John, then, this leads naturally to the conclusion, beloved ones, if that's how God has loved us, then we ought to show love for one another. So Christian faith involves trusting that at the center of the universe is a being overflowing with love for his world. Which means that the purpose of human existence is to receive this love that has come to us in Jesus and then to give it back out to others, creating an ecosystem of others-focused, self-giving love. And that's the New Testament meaning of agape love.
Gotta love those guys.
What kind of love, agape?
There you go. That was a good one.
Pizza love.
Pizza love, right? Just a second here. Wait, it's not where I want to go. That's where I want to go. No, that's not where I want to go. Why am I not able to So, oops, now I know what I did. Just a second. Hold, please. There we go. Now we're better. Well, I'm getting there, I promise. Okay. No. Okay. All right. Whew. Okay. So he brings up the, you know, the commandment, right? The Mark 12, and he talks about, you know, Christ answering this question, which one is the most important? What is the most important commandment? Which is, Jesus answers, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." And he goes on to say, right, if you notice that, that basically Jesus is saying, these are two sides of the same coin, right? That this interdependency between love of the Lord and love of our neighbor are one and the same. One reflects the other, right? If you remember that, that he brought that in, and that they're actually inseparable. To me, this was quite enlightening from that perspective of, and he goes into this as well, especially for those people you don't care for. Yeah, right? Yeah. That happens, right? Sometimes we don't care for people. And I think he goes on to talk about that love is actionable. This is something I think we recognize. We probably recognize more during the holidays than we do during the year, I would think. I think during the holidays, we tend to think about how can we serve the poor or serve the homeless during this time, or, you know what I mean, versus doing something like that every month of the year. It's just one of those times where we start to bring out this, as he calls it, right, this love that is actionable. It's not a feeling, it's a choice you make to seek the well-being of others. And then the well-being of others, though, you know, I think sometimes we get a little jaded. I think sometimes we believe that the well-being of others is what we want their well-being to be. It may not be what they want. I don't know how many of you saw the article where Watermark, unfortunately, lost the zoning for their Southern Dallas campus. And the folks in South Dallas were very upset because they had not actually communicated what they were trying to do. And one of the people, one of the quotes was about, don't come in and be our savior, right? And I think that's, we have a tendency to do that as a people where we want to reach out and help those that are in need, but we want to help them on our terms. Not necessarily their terms or what we or what they really want or need. We know better. Not really. Anyway, just a thought. So I think ultimately, right, and I'm not sharing anything with you people that you don't already know, right? Christ's death on the cross was the ultimate demonstration of love. I mean, how many of us would give our kids up for others? I'm not doing it. No way. I'm sorry. I'm a selfish pig. I mean, maybe some days. Maybe some kids. No, I'm just kidding. Just
Paul, the reverse of that is how often would we choose to give up ourselves for our kids?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point.
And that's, I think, that every parent probably has a similar answer.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. As you're holding the little one and, yeah, yeah, exactly. No, totally agree. And Mackey brings out, you know, Romans 5:8, right? God demonstrated his own, he says, agape, his own love for us. And this, while we were still sinners, the Messiah died for us, right? Once again, this is at the heart of our beliefs. I mean, this is what Christianity is all about. So, I think as we round out Advent, love becomes kind of that anchor at the end, right? It's what we're recognizing. If you remember back to week one, where we talked about hope, and that it was the hope in the return of Christ, it's this hope that comes, and it's from that love of Christ that ultimately God will come back, right? His Christ will come back. And that's really what our hope is in. And this, I think, is around this love and this approach is around our, really our focus as we go forward as a believer in the Lord. I mean, let's face it, you reaching out and supporting someone physically says a lot more about your faith than perhaps sharing what I used to do, which was the four spiritual laws. Go crusade, right? I mean, there's something to that you're putting a little bit behind that. And I think what Mackie is saying is that's demonstrating love. That's demonstrating the love of Christ when we're reaching out to others. Okay? Nothing earth-shattering. I totally get that. Okay, so let's think about questions in our groups. Going back to the waiting, right? Think about in your group together, perhaps you share with your group a Christmas memory that you have and the anticipation or waiting that you experienced. So that would be one. The second is, what are some practical ways we can listen or pay attention to what God is doing in our daily lives? And then last but not least, are there any people that come to mind this season that you can demonstrate actionable love? So we'll take 5 or 10 minutes. All right? Okay. Break. We've got a small group. It's going to be just a couple of...